My name is Said Sheikh Abdi, and I'm a senior private sector partnership lead at the International Organization for Migration, also known as the United Nations Migration Agency. Within our division, we are dedicated to fostering collaboration and engaging with the private sector to maximize the positive impact of migration and to support safe, orderly, and regular migration. Fostering deep and deepening partnership with the key stakeholders, including universities, are crucial aspects of our work as an IOM. International Organization for Migration was founded after World War II. Our mandate is because of we are the leading intergovernmental organization in the field of migration, and our job is to ensure humane and orderly migration for the benefits of all. And also we have a global presence. We are actually have about 151 offices around the world, and we have about over 20,000 staff globally. What IOM does, it provides services and advice governments and migrants, including refugees, internally displaced persons, and migrant workers. What are some of the key activities that we do? This includes to respond emergency crisis, migration healthy, migration migrant protection, and promoting international cooperation on migration issues. Let's look about the fact about migration. Currently, there are over 281 million international migrants globally. This is 3.6% of the total global population. The majority of the migration is work-related, with about 170 million people classified as migrant workers. This includes number of professors at the ESSEC School of Business who are from 36 countries. Similarly, this also includes hundreds of international students who studied or are studying today at this school. Displacement, as of 2022, there are a record of 117 million displaced individuals globally due to the conflict, violence, disaster, and other factors. Also, it's important to point out that irregular migration poses significant risk, including exploitation, human trafficking, and dangerous journey. Integrating migrants into the host communities remains a challenge with issues such as social cohesion, access to services, employment opportunities. Also, it's important to mention there's a climate change issue that forces a lot of people to migrate and become displaced, but also migrate from their homes. The last but not least on the migration challenges, misinformation. Public discourse on migration is officially clouded by misinformation and politicizing, leading to negative perceptions and policies. So now let's talk about what are the opportunities, what are the importances that migration opportunities. The first one is economic contribution. Migrants contribute significantly to the economies of the host countries, sending remittances to their development in their home countries. In 2024 alone, international remittances reached about $831 billion. So you can imagine the economic impact. Second, migration can also enhance the development by providing opportunities for education, which a lot of the students who are international today are studying in this school. Employment, a lot of professors who are teaching this school are actually part of my beneficiaries, and also improving the living standard. Effective migration management requires international cooperation with initiatives like Global Compact of Migration, promoting shared responsibilities and coordinated actions. Lastly, policy development. So the policymakers of each country gives the migration gives an opportunity to develop inclusive and evidence-based migration policy that addresses both challenges and opportunities, and ensuring migration benefits all parts involved. So, as an international closing the remarks, let me be close my remarks and talk about it. We must start by changing the narrative and seeing the migration for what it is. An opportunity that the reality that migration is not a problem to solve it, but an opportunity to seize. Example, how many of you know the founder of Apple is a migrant origin? How many of you know the founder of Amazon is also a son of migrant? How many of you know that Elon Musk of Tesla is actually a migrant from South Africa? So this gives you an opportunity, the migrant contribution to the host communities, and today they are number one leaders in terms of the businesses. So what's IOM's approach when it comes to involving? Our approach is whole of government and whole of society strategy to ensure that migration and migrants' needs are considered across all policy areas, from healthy to education, from fiscal policies to trade. IOM's refreshing vision is to serve migrants, our member states, and our workforce through people-focused and data-driven strategic approach that allows us to deliver on the promises of migration while supporting world's most vulnerable communities. Again, it's an honor to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me. I look forward to our conversation. All difficult questions should go to Stephen. All the simple questions is for me. Does that sound good? Good. Stephen.
Okay. Do you want to have a seat? Okay, let's have a seat. I have questions here. So before I start, I just wanted to ask you if you have any questions on those matters that are urgent to you. That you think you want to discuss or exchange with Said, who's here with us from Geneva tonight. Are there any already early on ones from your side? Okay. Then what I would like to invite Said, maybe if you can share with us a little bit about concretely what it looks like on one side having the European Union or having people here in France. I think you agree with me when we go to shops, when we go to the hospital, when we go to the restoration, we have plenty of people that are working there or not? When you go to your shops that you usually go shopping, do you still have plenty of retail workers? Il manque. Il manque partout. In retail, dans les hôpitaux, in the hotel industry. So the question is, on one side we have people missing here, and on the other side we have a continent where, let's say, for example, Africa, we have a very young workforce. In many cases, actually surprising for you, some of you, very skilled and, highly skilled. Concretely, what are you doing to balance out the need from Europe for skilled workers and the supply from, let's say, African countries or in Latin America or other parts of the world?
Well, thank you very much. Can you hear me well? Yes, this is the first time after so many years to be in front of students, and also you reminded me my old days at the university. It's an honor to be here, and this is a very important question. But before, I wanted to highlight three things. Why people migrate, leave from their country, and go to another country, right? This is the first question. So a lot of people leave and come to another country, like, for example, in the continent of Africa or other continents, and come to Europe, because there's a political instability in their country. There's a problem, right? There's a war. Then they want to run away from that war, right? And so that is political. They did not have the choice but to save their lives. So that's why. So number one. Number two, they migrate because of the climate shocks. They could not live in their country because of the climate change that happened. They lost everything they own, whether they are farmers or animal herders. So they lost it, and then they could not find a better place. So they decided to leave from their country, go to a neighboring countries or other countries that they think they can live and work and they can build a life. The third one is a socioeconomic issue. What does it mean this? So in some countries, they are producing more young graduates. And when they finish the universities, there are no jobs available in the market. So what they do if they cannot get a job in their own country? And this is what forces some of them to come and look for jobs through regular migration or in some cases, irregular migration. So these are the three things. So now, also it's important to highlight the world has become a global village. The business that you have here, the same companies that are working today in France are actually working in your neighbor countries, are actually working in other continents. I've seen Carrefour in here in France, but also I see them in many countries in the world, including Kenya, where Stephen and I actually used to do the grocery shopping there. It's a French-owned company. So then what comes to that, every company needs human capital. Without human capital, the country cannot survive, right? They have to have employees working for them and provide their technical expertise and make sure the company is profitable. So what we have noticed in many companies in Europe and in the Western world, because of birth of the population has decreased it, then many of the small and medium companies are facing challenges now. Even if you start a company today and you cannot find enough labor to help your company grow up or even sustain. What happens that if you cannot find an employee? First, you lose your business because every day you're losing profit or maybe you're saving your investment. And the second, what happens is that governments, members of governments, normally collect taxes from the private sector. So if the company gets out of the market, the government, there's no way to collect the tax. And what happens if there's no tax collections? Then the government cannot afford to sustain the infrastructures and the services that it provides to its citizens. So this is one of the things. So what we have seen recently, the EU countries, there is a shortage of labor. And in some countries, they are required to fill 2 million jobs every year, or the small and medium business will not survive. So in order to sustain the business, the governments came up with policies to attract skilled laborers from other countries. And now they are signed a bilateral agreement between, for example, in the case of France, maybe another country, and then in that agreement is to provide skilled labor to fill the gap that existed. The healthcare system otherwise will break down, for example, in some countries. And then the sending country, they are producing more young population. In the case of Africa, 2050, Africa will be producing the youngest generation in the world, more than China and more than India. So you can imagine young population coming out from Africa, unable to find a job, and then you have countries like continents like in Europe having jobs to fill it up. So it's more about in business demand and supply. But what happens that then when they come here and they work, they send the money back to their family members, but also they come here, they rent houses, they go to the restaurants, they buy shoppings in here. So then what happens is that then they pay tax as well. So it's a benefit to the host country, but also they send some money back. And that is why I mentioned in my speech that the migrants send about $831 billion a year. So this is one of that. On the other side, there's also challenges that needs to be addressed. When they come, if we take, let's say, the brightest and the brilliant graduates from this country, one of those countries in Africa, if they come to Europe, what happens to the healthcare system in that country? If you take all the nurses that are highly qualified and say, like, we have a job here, they will come because of here is paying more, right? And then what happens to the healthcare system in the country they came from? So in many countries, then the healthcare collapses. This is where we come in because of IOM has 175 countries members. We say, how can we create what we call a win-win situation, regular pathways, where they can come and work and they can go back after 2 years or 3 years. In this case, both countries benefit, both communities benefit, and then also the business also benefits, the private sector also benefits. So this is one of those. But we need to make sure there's no brain drain. we have to balance, right? If there is supply and demand is not balanced, any business will actually collapse it. Either if you oversupply or undersupply, that is a challenge. So this is one of the areas that actually right now we are seeing how we can do. And it's not only the EU, we are talking about also in North America. There's a shortage of human capital. Many companies, also the business is changing. It requires different skills that needs to be with a new technology, new changes. So these are the, some of the things that needs to be addressed. It as an IOM, we are the leading intergovernmental organization that is the focal point for when it comes to the migration. And this is where we are having conversations how we can solve this. It's not one country's problem, it's a global problem. It's a supply and demand, it's a business related in, and for you as a student who are studying in the business, you can understand it. Business is all about profit, making sure the customers get good services and products, and this is how it's very important for private sector. This is how it's important for the member states, so government sending and the receiving countries. I hope I answered your question, Stephen.
Thank you. Do we have any interruptions? Feel free. We're looking and we're happy to share with you. You mentioned the brain drain. Well, before we go into the brain drain, maybe if you can give us a concrete example of companies, let's say in France, that are looking for employees, skilled employees for their operations. What are they concretely doing and what is your role in the process of getting employees into their organizations, because it's probably not as straightforward as you might think it could be.
It is very complex. There's a lot of negotiation have to happen, right? And it's not only France. It's we're talking about EU, AU. EU, pretty much you all know. AU is African Union, the continent of Africa, the organization that represents us, negotiating together. From our side, as an IOM, we bring them on the table to have a conversation, helping them come up with the policies that are all aligned with everyone. And as an IOM, one of our biggest mandates is protecting the migrants, right? When they have an issue, we are the ones who are responsible. And that is one of the things that we protect it. And, but also, the negotiation is not an easy. Every country has its own demand and needs to be met, and so it is one of those opportunities. But we look through the lens of the what we call optimism, right? We look through the positive side. Of course, there is a real challenge. Everyone understands the problem, but also how is the where actually happens for the conversation a lot, because that's a critical important. There is a political side that needs to be agreed by each country. There is also a procedure that needs to be agreed, but also there is a service that needs to be agreed. For example, which sector, when we talk about workers, are we talking about low skill, I mean semi-skill, low skill, high skill, medium skill workers? And this is one of those things that we need to have, we have a conversation to understand it better. It's a very complex thing when it comes to the migration. But also, it's a very important, the migration, you name any country, most of the countries who are well-developed, you can literally see they benefited from the migrants. And I'm talking about the countries like in the U.S. If you look today, the Silicon Valley, more than 51% of the startup in Silicon Valley, founders were migrants. They came because of when people from different cultures come together, guess what happens? New idea comes up, right? I had this earlier this afternoon an opportunity to meet with three of the students here, maybe in the room, and we had a conversation, very interesting, which is how can we help migrants access to the services they need, the housing, the employment, in a faster way. So I can see the light bulb that these students, when they were discussing coming from different nationalities, different backgrounds, that they may be able to come up with an amazing organization or platform that can address some of the challenges. So all the founders that you see today, the courses that you're taking, it's also, it helps you to open to that. you can also provide guidance on the policies. This university alone has, I believe, over 7,000 international students, and then also 154 professors who are coming from 36 international countries. So coming up together brings a knowledge that you can find a global knowledge. So that is why it's very important. But coming back to your question, of course, it's not an easy. It requires a conversation. It requires a buy-in, local, national, international, and moving forward. And this is also, it requires a lot of investment. But reality is that we are one global village, and I think we, every one of us, I mean, when we talk about every country around the world, wants to benefit of the migration, and most of them are already benefiting it.
Now, looking at it a little bit more in a critical way, you mentioned earlier the brain drain. Is everybody familiar with brain drain? What is it in, do we know what is in French? Brain drain? Does anybody have a translation for that in French? C'est quoi? Voilà, ok. So, alors vous êtes au courant. Qu'est-ce que c'est? And I think here I really like to get your view again, because you moved along very quickly. But I think having been in the Eastern Horn of Africa myself, we see how, I'm German, and we have our chancellor coming to Kenya and says, I need thousands of your best nurses. Nurses that will work for me in a hospital in Germany. So what's happening? Those nurses, they are attracted by good salaries, good working conditions, better working conditions, and they're going. They're leaving behind a country in which hospitals already are suffering. So my question is, how concretely are you working with companies to prevent them going on a one-sided deal with countries, and by excluding you or by excluding policymakers?
So in general, when we talk about labor migration, so the two countries signed an agreement. The sending country and the receiving country. So the IOM does not sign. These are the two countries negotiating. We help them make sure they facilitate, understand it, the implication, right? So what they sign, it's called the bilateral labor agreement. And then within the bilateral labor agreement, they put the terms of the agreement. In some of the agreements, there is a development money that is also involved in it, right? So there is a pipeline, for example, for medical professionals. How many are graduating from the university? How many the country needs to employ? What is left over? Are there some left over or not? If not, how we can make sure our healthcare system is protected? Because if we send a health professionalist, then the healthcare system collapses. And what happens in it? In some countries, they are spending billions of dollars because of that scenario for medical tourism. So how we protect? So our job, we advise the member states, as I mentioned in my speech. We advise them and say, like, okay, this is what's going to happen. We need to address all this. And what happens is that the Minister of Education comes in. It's very important because of this. The Minister of Education is responsible that the youth goes to the universities, graduates in the pipeline. It's like a business. Think about it. You're all studying in business. So the supply and demand, right? Just to make sure you have enough supply by the time you're sending that one. So private sector, in pharmaceutical companies, some of them they do, or even real estate, 80-20 rules. Once you sell 80% of your product and you have only 20% in your store, you want to make sure you get the other 80% immediately, so then the customers stays it. Because if you don't have it, customers will not come back, right? They will say, like, we're not sure if they will have the supply. So in this scenario, we want to make sure the supply and demand and supply matches it. It's a very important also to acknowledge that member states understand the implication, the decisions that one country is making, and the impact that it's going to make to that country. because you needed to make sure that you have it. So we're balancing that one. But also, Stephen, it's very important to mention the diaspora in this angle. How many of you know the diaspora? Okay.
Diaspora. Vous êtes au courant?
Right? So then I think most of you know the diaspora, right? So when the diaspora comes in, gets education in this amazing university, graduates, works 6 years or 7 years in France, then decides to go back and start a business in the country of origin, and succeeds and creates jobs. So we are also seeing that, what we call the brain gain, because they have seen an opportunity to succeed their business when they go back. So this was also another important to mention. So it's not only brain drain, but also we see brain gain because of when they come to a university like this, they learn the knowledge, they learn the skills, they learn how to, the technology that is, and they leveraged it. Because of the knowledge they learned it, many of the diaspora went back and became millionaires today. I've met some of them who have been very successful, came from different part of the world, but decided to go back and created a new opportunity, new jobs, and also for the youth, and employed thousands of youth around the world.
You were talking about diaspora. Maybe a quick word on remittance, because that is an aspect that is often overlooked. It is basically the money that goes back from people that work in their respective host country that goes back. And the argument goes that with that money, you turn around the economy in your country that you're coming from. Would you say this is true, or would you say the money goes really just to private individuals, or not necessarily to the development of infrastructure, education, et cetera, et cetera? And what are the negative aspects behind bringing the money back?
So there's a very important question, this. So there is a positive side, and then there's also a questionable side, I call. The positive side is when a migrant comes in and works in another country, let's say in France, and then sends $200 or $300 back to her family or his family. What happens and what we see is about those $300, the family goes to buy food, the family goes sending the child to go to school, and also the family pays the health care if a child is sick or if a mother or a parents are sick. So that money plays a vital role. It's between the sender and his family member, whether it's a close family member or also friends. So that money ends up in the hands of family to family. And this is what the remittance is in. So what happens is that I mentioned in my speech, there are about $831 billion annual remittance, the money that is being sent by migrants globally back to their country of origin. This money, the country receives that money in hard currency, which means like in dollar. What does it mean? It means they have money to purchase things that the country needs from outside, whether it's oil, whether it's manufacturers, other things that they needed it, because the hard currency comes in dollar and then it changes to local currency, it's benefited. So that money goes to individual. Then there is another money that diaspora actually have seen in some of the countries, diaspora trustee fund, where they allocate some of the diaspora came together because they come from one nationality and they said, we want to invest in our country together. Maybe we come from France and we live in the US, let's say. And we collect all our money. Maybe the money I send to my parents or my family is individual for my, but I wanted an investment to make money. And so they came an idea, they say, like, let's send $1 million to invest in a specific startup in France. And then they succeeded with that return of investment. But also they say, they may negotiate with the government, say, we also wanted to invest in some of the projects that the government is working on that, and we need a return of our investment. And the government says, okay, we're building this project, how much are you guys contributing? Instead of the government taking a loan from banks, they take it actually investment from the diaspora. So those are kind of some of the things that we have seen. But it is country to country. It's also diaspora to diaspora. So in some cases, we see the diaspora investing another diaspora in the state of government. So, but in overall, this remittance plays a vital role. We see this remittance in some cases is a humanitarian. It saves lives in some countries that are having challenges and because of high unemployment and so forth. So I hope I answered this your question.
Is before I continue, yes, there's a question here. Jessica.
Do you think creating jobs and opportunities in the countries that produce a lot of migrants in Africa, should it be one of the main solutions to reduce migration? And how students like us could be useful for this continent from an economic perspective to create these new opportunities?
Very good question. As I mentioned it, one of the reasons that migrants are leaving, one of the three, is because of lack of jobs. If they have a job is there, a job that can take care of their family, most of the migrants who are coming as socioeconomic, they will stay. And that's a reality. People stay in their own country. They love to stay. The reason they are leaving is this is the last option for them to survive, to make sure that we have heard stories of some of the migrants who came to Europe and other part of the world saying that I'd rather travel in regular migration to make sure that I feed my family rather than watching my mother and my father dying without food. It's very tough. It's very challenging. So yes, your question is, the jobs, if they are available, they will stay. People migrate for opportunities as well. Also, it's also very important to know. People migrate for better job, better future, right? We as human, all of us, if we get today a job from another place that is paying better, we will move, right? We will go. Whether it's in the US, whether it's in Canada, or whether it's in France, or whether it's the UK, if we find another opportunity. So people sometimes make that. But most of the migrants who you see, they are actually coming for an opportunity. But also, even if they stay, some of the countries will still attract them to come and work because they need to fill the gap of their economy, right? Some of the private companies actually will say, oh, we're shortage for the constructions. We don't have enough electricians because our students are not studying electric or plumbing. So we need someone to fill up the gap or the painters, right? So it's all about economic attraction from one country to another country. But to your question, yes, they rather stay with their family members. Every day they rather to see their faces, spend time, eat dinner with them, but the only option, some of them who are coming in regular migrations, they have no choice but to come. But the other ones also, they come here to learn and experience because they cannot, technology is different. The technology that is available in here is not available in many African countries. So by coming here, studying this amazing university, they're learning something that will benefit for them in the long term. So that's. So then also we have what we call the circular migration. So they come, work for 2 weeks, two years, I mean, or 3 years. That's a circular migration. After 3 years, they go back to their country. Their main aim is for 3 years experience, work, make some money, and then go back. And then that's so there's a different kind of, I hope I answered your question.
If I can just add, from what I understood, the question was like, don't people prefer to stay home, are they looking for the opportunities abroad, right? So it comes up a bit. I just wanted to add a number on that.
My question was, does creating more opportunities could be a way to limit migration and help Africans? And how can students like us help and go, for instance, in Africa to develop some economic aspects? What should be the priority?
Okay, so maybe you can answer the second part of the question about what can students do here in your role as students, but also maybe even as future business leaders, decision makers, when it comes to migration challenges in those respective countries. Maybe you can answer that, but before you answer, I just wanted to share this because, and I think that is another question to add on, and that is about facts. And the facts and where you get them from and what we make out of them. And this, what Said said, it was about people prefer to actually stay home and not cross the Mediterranean Sea or move through Central America. I just want to share with you a figure from the United Nations Gender Office. They found that on their way from the Middle East or from Africa to across the Mediterranean, that's one route, women and girls on average are about 60 to 70% of girls and women are raped by the smugglers. And they know the numbers and they still go. That gives you an idea about the desperation. On the route from Central America to North America, US border, we're looking at 90%. In fact, women and girls, before they start traveling, take precautions on that matter because they're aware that 9 out of 10 are going to be raped by the human traffickers and smugglers. So that's just giving you one quick number here. But Said, maybe you can share with us what students can do right now, but also in their future careers.
Question. This is one of the most important questions that when I go places and I speak, I've been asked, what can we do as students? What can we do as a communities? What can we do as a private sector, right? So my answer is we cannot do also everything, right? Every one of us can do something, but we cannot do everything. And this is a very important question. Thank you for asking me. What I call is the do the doable. Let's do things that we can do, right? I call it do the doable. What can we do tonight as we are sitting here, each one of us sitting here having this conversation? One is to learn, to get more facts about migration. Because there's a lot of misinformation around the world, right? It's not only migration, but everything else. So to educate yourself is number one. And some of the things that you can read is World Migration Report that we published it. You can see the numbers, you can see the factors, you can see. So that's something that you can do it as an individual. When you go back, you say, I'm very curious, I wanted to know more about it. I want to educate and understand what is this, what is a global perspective, what is the regional perspective, what is a national perspective on this issue, and how we can address, right? You need to compare benefits and the challenges as well, right? So then you can decide, you say, okay, now this is the area that I would like to advocate, do the doable, right? All of you can read World Migration Report, right? You can do. So I say it's a symbol, doable now. The other thing also you can do to be updated and educated, if you have a Twitter, you can join with IOM, UNIO Migration, or in the French they call it OIM. So you can join because you can see a lot of the things that we are doing it to better understand, to know us, who we are as an IOM, right? So today you are almost 400 students. You can all of you show that you care about the migration, you want to learn, you want to understand. You can join with the IOM LinkedIn, IOM Twitter, just to be updated with what's happening around the world, just to be familiar. You can also go to our website, iom.int, just to understand what activities that we're doing in terms of the humanitarian, in terms of for the development and the peace, the humanitarian development, peace nexus, those three areas. That will be the dual. The other thing is also you can also do, look at it, learn from your colleague. Maybe, do you know the person who sitting next to you? Ask the name. Ask what part of the city they come from within France. Ask what part of the world they came from, if they are within Europe or without. You just learn it because that's a good experience, right? It's a good start to have conversation. because of everything studies at home. So this is my recommendation to you, just to start it. But definitely, let's put it this way, migration is the benefit for all of us. Many products that we are using today, whether it's the food, whether it is commodity that we're using, clothes or so forth, came from somewhere, worked by someone. So we are benefiting from all of us directly or indirectly, right? So that is the things. And we need all of us, because of every human being, whether we are in this room or outside, has a value to offer to this world, right? The world is bigger than us, so we have to accommodate. This is what my recommendation to you, do the doable. Just remember that. What can I do? I can read now, I can do myself, I can educate myself, so then I get the right information before I make the decision. Which direction should I go?
Do we have any other, there's a question in the back? Or is it stretching? There's a question.
Hello. What do you think about the current management of migrants in France and more generally in Europe? The welcoming of migrants. What do you think about it?
It's a very good question. If I correctly understand it, how do I see welcoming migrants to France? Is that
yes.
your question?
The opposition between the government, like France or and Italy, about migrants. And
yes.
So the weaponization about it?
So this is a political question, and I one of those things that I asked you, all the difficult questions should go to him, but that's fine. I'll try to comment, right? So let me say, I mentioned it, we have 175 countries who are members of IOM, the UN Migration, 175 countries. Many of them are in Europe, but, and also France is one of them. It's a country's decision to make to balance it, right? Between migration and also the local. It's a very also important to know the challenges, right? Yes. So it's a case by case, country by country, but what we know is that every country, including France, agrees the migrant protections, you know, understands the value of the migration, but also it is very important to know the demand and supply, right? So there's equal sharing. So France is part of the EU, and so a lot of the things that we are actually doing is that the decision belongs to the country, not the IOM, right? But for us, we advise them. This is what's happening. This is the implication. This is the fact. This is the research that we have done it. This is what we see as a solution, and this is what can implicate, right? So it has economic implications, it has political implications, and also it has global implications as well, right, for each country. So that is how I will ask. I'm a bit diplomat on that angle, right?
Thank you.
Okay. I know. Maybe it does. You're not 100%. You wanted probably a great or not so great, like a yes or no. The black and white kind of answer that we would like to expect. But the question itself is, how are migrants welcomed? The question itself, and I'm not trying to criticize you, but the question itself is complex because there are different types of migrants. There are legal migrants. There are migrants that, you know, people that are looking asylum, people that want to work. So migrants that come from just across the border, people moving within. So the question itself is sometimes more complex, and it's not allowing us to answer it as simply as it sounds like in your TV shows or in your that we always see in on television. So it's a little bit more complex. But that brings me maybe to another question. Do we have another one here? I would like to just ask, I'm looking a little bit at a time, but I wanted to ask you about, and you're probably familiar with the UK and Rwanda. Are you familiar with the UK tried to do a deal with Rwanda, another country in Africa, to basically, when migrants are coming and we don't we don't allow them to stay there. We send them to Rwanda where, well, actually no, they immediately are being sent to Rwanda, and there they're being put into areas where a decision is being made about whether or not they can get asylum or get access to or a permission, but then they would stay in the country. So this argument about business opportunities with a third country option is not even working out, because the UK will never benefit from any business opportunities. What is your take on this third country option?
So very good question. Seven, when we talk about migrants, there are different kind of migrants, right? We're talking about the students who are studying here are migrants. Teachers who came from another nationality teaching at the university, the school is also migrants, right? So when we talk about migrants, we talk about also regular migration or irregular migration. Well, the ones who came with regular migration, they started, they had the money, they had the business idea, they came here, they started business, they started open factories, but they were have a nationality of another country, whether it's from within Europe or outside of the Europe. So that is what we call the regular migration. They come normal procedure. So they're migrants, right? So we need to understand the definition of migrants. Anyone who lives from his or her own country or within the country from one city to another city for different purpose or for different reason is a migrant, one of us. I'm a migrant. I work now in Geneva. Born in a country, worked in living in the U.S., so moving from one country to another country, even if you go for a job in UK in London, you're a migrant. So on this issue for Rwanda and also the UK, it does not exist anymore. It's not valid anymore, as you know. So it's a decision between the two countries. Bilateral agreement is a specific migrant target. And from our side, as the UN, we know we are. Our position is very clear. I mean, we protect the migrants, and we want to make sure the migrants' rights are protected, which is the underline for our UN migration.
Okay, thank you, Said, for that response. Do we have any questions? Any last question? Yes, one last question.
Well, we heard a lot of facts, I want to stand up. Okay. Well, a lot of opportunities with migration, etc. Nevertheless, we can see in Europe, for instance, or even in France, that there are a lot of populist parties that are against, and they are using fear, for instance, or misinformation about migration. And don't you think we have to fight with something else than facts, simply? On this matter.
Do we have to fight something else rather than facts?
I think what we call a very good question. I think conversation, start with your neighbor. Have a conversation one at a time, right? That's one of those things. People, all of us, we see the world through different lens. Right? And it's okay to have different opinions. It's not only about migration, it's about everything, right? It's a different opinion. Even if today you talk to your brother or your sister or your parents, they have a different opinion, right? They see the world. If you say, I want to major A, maybe your parents will say, no, it's actually you have to be a doctor. The world is changing because of... And then you say, no, it's actually technology I want to go because AI... And that things is changing every day. So my recommendation... It's one of those, on our job, the fact is education is very good. We're well educated. We go to universities, we know the fact is, we also have an independent mind, right? So, and this is really very important. The best way is to sit down, maybe tea and talk, or coffee and talk, right? Have a conversation, open conversation. Listen from the perspective where they're coming from as a human being, right? And also, then we can address it. Without the fact that, but like listening to them is a very important thing. It's like, right? If you come to me today and say, yes, there's a problem with migration, of course there are challenges on migration. It's not deniable, right? But also there are opportunities. How can you balance it? These are the two things, right? And how we can together, come together, address the challenges and opportunities. After all, we're talking about human being, right? After all, we are talking about human being, right? There's a reason why this human being did something. So I think that is what I will recommend to you. I think that's the one. And I mentioned to you, there are so many examples of successful migrants who did very successful. And also, so my recommendation is tea and talk or coffee and talk.
Just to add on this a little bit, maybe going back to business school, you're probably not familiar yet with Kotler's 7 steps of transformation. It's a leadership theory, and it starts with, if you want to change a business, create a sense of urgency. Create a sense of urgency. And this is what people are doing today with a rhetoric that talks about invasion, that talks about we're on the edge. So it's the rhetoric. So it's not just facts. It's the rhetoric that changing the facts and changing the rhetoric. And so in that sense, maybe you can start having a different rhetoric. So not just using facts, but also communicating in them in a different way. And opening up or, how can you say this? Making it transparent, the kind of rhetoric that is false and is creating a false sense of emergency. Saeed mentioned it. Migration, global migration, has been stable for the last 10 years, around 3%. Stable, globally, in proportion to the population. So there is no real invasion globally, or people have always moved. So if I can just add to the tea and coffee, look at the rhetoric that people are using and change the rhetoric yourself with hard facts. I think that can be a starting point to move forward and to bring down this sense of urgency that many people around us like to promote. Saeed, I'd like to finish here. I'm looking at the time, and I know you have a busy agenda. So I will stop here, thanking you for the opportunity to talk to us. I just wanted to also add maybe one or two sentences here. Yusifa Saeed, coming from an international organization, he has worked in NGOs or humanitarian organizations. With these evenings, we want to introduce to you different topics that are probably not on the agenda on a daily basis in our classrooms. But we also want to introduce you to different geographical outlooks that go beyond Europe or beyond the US. We haven't talked about Africa, and you probably will talk very little about Africa, Latin America, Southeast Asia. And we also want to introduce you to different professions, different organizations, entrepreneurs, consultants, the different opportunities that you have, also in your choices with your internships. And I hope you choose maybe as one alternative or one option to go and work in an NGO and look behind factories and look behind the kind of curtains that create some sort of bubble in which we are living very often. So, Saeed, a big thank you for coming to us today.